to laws by Congress, and you're absolutely right. Congress can set up what laws it wants. Mm-hmm. But as I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather for days on end.
Or colder.
Or colder. The one I read said that they would use for weeks in the cell, and they'd pour water on them, mm-hmm. make someone stand up for 40 hours straight, wake someone up every 10 minutes. And this has been understood by international standards under Geneva Conventions to be beyond them. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to? I don't think that our standards should be, you know, what Syria does or what Saddam Hussein did. I think we should hold ourselves to the same standard that the civilized countries of the world do. And I think John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats agree with me, but the president is saying, no, we need to fight terror. We have to go below those standards. Isn't that the heart of the debate?
Omar, as you know, the Geneva Convention, we all admit, does ban torture. The question is,
what is torture?
What is torture?
Right.
We would all agree that if I took my fist and you were my suspect that I was interrogating and I put my fist through your face about 35 times in a row, that would be torture. That's not a problem. However, if I make you strip nude and I make you stand in a room that's 50 degrees and I keep you there for 24, 48, 72 hours thinking about whether you really, really want to answer my questions, is that torture? I submit there's a strong argument made that that's not torture.
Let me ask you this. We have military servicemen, 140,000, as you know, serving mm-hmm. in Iraq. In fact, at the end of this broadcast, we're going to honor one of them from Northern Virginia who fell. We have tens of thousands in Afghanistan. We have troops all over the world. If we do it, and it is our practice to do it, there can be little question that our enemies will do it against us, and they will cite us and say, hey, you put this guy in 50-degree weather for a week and while he was shivering, and so we're going to do it to your GIs. And John McCain, who himself was mistreated, tortured in a North Vietnamese prison, has said, we shouldn't do that because, not just because it's beyond what I would argue civilized standards, but because it harms our own troops in the long run. And I think that's a very powerful argument. How would you respond?
Well, I do admit to you 100% that whatever treatment we specify in legislation, in public, that we believe is the correct interpretation of the Geneva Convention is certainly, you know, sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander.
I think so.
There's no reason to think that what we define as legitimate interrogation techniques can't be used by our enemies on our people. And I think the president has kept that in mind, and that is, you know, I mean, he doesn't even need the impetus that we won't use physical torture. But I do think that there are certain things that can be used successfully to get people to be more cooperative in terms of the information that they spill, that they obviously, the president has told us in the last 2 weeks about some very, very successful interrogations, particularly Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. But
I don't know that anyone can say that it was because he was waterboarded. I mean, what's interesting is I don't know that any of the information we received, and I haven't heard the president, tell me if you've heard anyone in the administration say that the only reason we got information from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is because of the way we tortured him. I haven't heard that.
We didn't torture him. In fact, the president has said that nothing that happened to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or anybody else in our secret CIA prisons, which no longer exist now because the president's transferred them all to Gitmo.
I'll talk to you about that, too.
The president has said that absolutely nothing that happened in those prisons was something that Americans can't stand by and say that was not torture.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. The president's being coy. He doesn't want to say what's going on. So we hear reports, and I have no reason to believe these reports are false, and it's not just things like Abu Ghraib. We hear from CIA officers, waterboarding. I mean, they even have a name for it.
Mm-hmm.
You hold someone underwater until they're just about dead, and then throw them up to grass for
actually,
air.
Actually, that's not the case. You hold them underwater until they're just about panicked into thinking that they're drowning, and they will talk to avoid it again.
Apparently.
Apparently. It works.
Now, okay. Is this a tactic that you would defend?
I would, yes. I don't see
really?
Any problem. You're not inflicting any harm. You're not inflicting any pain. You're not denying somebody health or anything like that. What you're doing is you're creating an environment for them where they decide, you know what, I don't want to go through that again. I'm going to tell you what you want to know, and you've inflicted no pain or anything like that. I think in the end,
yes,
the president.
Something.
I think in the end, we're going to have a ban on waterboarding. In fact, I don't think the president's asked for waterboarding this time because my understanding of
he's
asked for.
He's being coy. He's not saying what he's asking for.
No. What he's asked for is we've been through this once before last spring, as you know, when again it was our good friend Senator McCain who wanted to legislate the language in the Army interrogation manual.
Right.
Senator McCain got his way.
Right. And the president did a signing statement saying, as I sign this into law, I don't plan to follow it.
But waterboarding was specifically not authorized in that particular thing. McCain won on that one. And what the president has asked for is the exact language that McCain won on last spring. But now Senator McCain wants to go one step further, and we're not quite sure where it's going.
Well, there's a reason for that. And the reason for that does come out of the Supreme Court ruling, which suggested that the United States, which is a signatory to the Geneva Conventions along with 100 other nations, and the civilized ones follow it, the uncivilized ones follow it less. So to some extent they do. I mean, you have to go country by country. Said that in the absence of a clear standard, this is a treaty. It applies. This is the standard. And there are guidelines under Geneva Conventions. There are guidelines that have been used for 60 years now, since World War II, where countries have defined, international law has defined, what works and what doesn't work. And it seems to me...
Not what works and what doesn't
work. What is humane and what is not humane.
Right. And
according to these standards. But here's my question. There are these international standards. And unless we're going to go, which the president would have a right to do, and renegotiate a new Geneva Convention. Right now, there's a certain standard of civilized nations. And I want to know, when you're fighting for America, what are you fighting for? I mean, if we fight for a country that tortures, if we fight for a country that has secret prisons, if we fight for a country that can lock someone up without a trial for life, then maybe that isn't America I want to defend. I think that we should hold ourselves. I'd like to say we have a higher standard than other civilized nations. I would like my America to do that. But at the very least, shouldn't we have the minimum civilized standard that other nations do? Or should we say, well, you know what, England and Canada, who also suffer from terrorist attacks, you're just better people than we are.
Well, we can take it one at a time, but I'll start with the first one, the most egregious one that I think, and we can pursue it further if you want to, or stay on this one. The secret prisons, and you indicated you want to talk about that. I have absolutely no problem when you have a suspect or a capture, a bad guy that you've got into custody who is clearly a top guy like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And you don't just send this guy to the D.C. jail or the L.A. jail or something like that. You want to put this guy, number one, in a very, very safe and secure position. You want to keep him isolated from everybody else for a long period of time. You don't want anybody to know he's there so that he just thinks that he's slowly rotting away with nobody even knowing what's going on, and his only contact is his interrogator, so that he becomes sort of like Stockholm Syndrome. He becomes dependent and trusting of his interrogator and starts to give out various pieces of information. This is the way we save American lives, and Mark, I got to tell you, I have no problem with that stuff.
Let's talk about the secret prisons. The secret prisons are not in the United States.
Right.
They're abroad. Now, why do you think, I have my theory, which I'd be happy to share with you, but why do you think that these secret prisons are in countries like Hungary or Poland or whatever, and they're not in Montana or Nebraska or Virginia or wherever they might be, where we certainly could have a prison in the United States established under U.S. law where we put people in there and do whatever techniques you want? Why are they abroad? Let me suggest to you what I think the reason is.
I think
they're abroad
right.
Because we don't want to follow the Constitution. We don't want to follow due process. If they're in the United States, we have to follow the Eighth Amendment, the Bill of Rights, which says we can't have cruel and inhuman punishment. They are abroad precisely so we can avoid the American values that adhere to American soil.
Well, I have argued on this show before, and I will still argue, that the Supreme Court got that one dead wrong. These captives are not entitled to the protections of our Constitution. They are illegal enemy combatants, and they should be happy for any meals we might want to give them. They're not entitled to Geneva Convention.
Illegal enemy combatants. You have an Iraqi, born in Iraq, fighting in Iraq for Iraqi nationalism. I'm not saying his cause is just. But he's an illegal enemy combatant.
He is an illegal enemy combatant. He's not entitled to anything, but I will
when
admit...
When he's sitting in our prisons in some secret place in Hungary.
The Supreme Court has ruled that they are entitled to certain protections. I have no idea where the court gets these ludicrous ideas, but they got this one, and they ruled, and in America we accept what the Supreme Court says. So what we're doing now is we are continuing to bring them now out of the secret prisons and into Gitmo so that we know where they are. They have Geneva Convention protections. They have Red Cross visitation. They have verification of everything that's going on there. And they will get their trials.
But you defend the continued existence of these prisons and using them in the future.
I would defend it. Absolutely.
I want to bring our listeners into the debate.
Saving American lives is too important.
Oh, that's just rhetoric, and you know it.
No, it's not.
I think saving American values is more important. We are better than this as a country.
Sometimes they might conflict.
I'm going to break. That's right. That's right. We'll get to that. Folks, if you want to join in the debate, we welcome you to come and join in and hear what you have to say. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK, 488-6275. However you want to count it, call in, join in the debate. We want to hear from you, and we'll be right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, it's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give someone a fish,
you feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Hey, mister, studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetness star.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop, debating the issues of the day with my guest, Mike Lane. And to me, Mike, this is a really basic question, a real basic American question that Congress was debating this week. Of course, they wouldn't even have debated it if the Supreme Court hadn't intervened, because the president said, I can do what I want, I'm beyond the law, I'll just torture whoever I want, secret prisons, I'm not even going to tell Congress about it, I'll just do it and that's fine. The Supreme Court said no. This is something under our Constitution that Congress has the right to decide. If they decide it, that's one thing. So they forced Congress, and I'm glad they did, to enter the debate, and now Congress is divided. You have most Republicans saying, in effect, that we don't have to hold to the same standards as civilized nations under the Geneva Conventions. We can do waterboarding and techniques like this. We can have secret prisons all over the globe. We don't need to show evidence with people when they've been convicted of a crime. We can hold them forever. And most Democrats and some key Republicans, like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, are saying, hold off. If we become like the enemy, then haven't we, in fact, lost the war?
Well, first of all, I don't know that there's any evidence that I've seen that other Western civilized countries, i.e. our allies, don't use some of these techniques. I've not heard Prime Minister Blair say that that's not something that they do. I've not heard the Prime Minister of Canada say that.
I've seen the debates in those countries, and they're always criticizing us for not following through. I mean, there's a whole body of international law here.
It may be that they don't do them. I'm sure they don't use it in France. I'm sure in France they offer them a glass of wine and a wedge of brie and say, now tell us what we want to know.
And they probably do, because that's good wine and good brie. Well, that's actually part of the point, is that, and I don't mean to joke too much, but from what I understand, and I've read, and, you know, I've never tortured anyone, so I can't say I'm a true expert.
We're in agreement on that one.
Not physically. Some call my program, but that's different. I'll give you an example that I have read about the Israeli experience. The Mossad, the Israeli secret police, were forbidden from torturing by the Israeli Supreme Court back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And what they found is actually, in some ways, they're doing better because they use trickery rather than force. That, I mean, if you're being tortured, Mike, and you're being waterboarded and you're about to die, are you going to come up and give you're an American Marine, you're going to give your positions of your fellow Marines who are going to die, and then they'll probably just kill you as well? Or are you going to say anything you want to say just to make the torture stop? And what they found, I think, is that's what people do. They just say, I'll tell you anything, and they just make up stuff.
I'll tell you what. I think everybody reacts to different interrogation techniques different ways. There are some that work better with one person, and a different way works better with another person. I would hope myself that I would be one of those people that if I was being interrogated, I would be able to give them my name, rank, and serial number as required by the Geneva Convention and nothing else. However, everyone does have a breaking point at some level or another.
Some go to death.
Well, some do go to their death, yes.
And some of these people that were fighting...
Or perhaps those people died before they found their breaking point with another technique.
But see, here's the thing. My guess is most of the people we're torturing fall into two categories, okay? Either they are true believers who believe, whether it's Islamic fundamentalist, radical, whatever. They believe in Osama bin Laden, they believe in Al-Qaeda, they want to destroy America. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think those are difficult people to crack and probably won't. Or they're innocent people who accidentally got trapped in. We saw this, in fact, in Guantanamo Bay. The majority of prisoners were people who we couldn't find they'd done anything wrong. Many times, for example, the Northern Alliance, which was our allies up in Afghanistan, had a bone to pick with a rival tribe. They captured them. They put them there. We, of course, never gave them any trial. We never found out if they had done anything wrong. We just assumed they were bad. And so they would sit for 5 years in Guantanamo Bay until we're like, oops, I guess you haven't done anything. So an innocent person, if you torture, not only do you not get any useful information, but you yourself, America, in my view, if they torture an innocent person, that to me, that's a war crime. I mean, you can argue about how people should be punished, but it seems to me that we end up, in most cases, maybe not all, either torturing innocent people, which is, I think, so egregious, so awful, it's un-American in my view, mm-hmm. or we end up torturing people who rarely confess, you know, I did it. And so, in essence, we give up American values. And what do we get in return? Not much.
Well, what we get in return in some cases, not in all cases, is the information we need to keep America and its citizens safe and secure.
But even the president has said that in Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, they didn't torture him to get that information.
Right. And I'm not arguing for
torture. So who has?
Give me
a successful example of torture. Why won't the president, if he's saying he wants his authority, okay, why doesn't he give us an example and say on such and such date, we put such and such guy in 50-degree weather, or we made him stand up for 60 hours, we interrupted his sleep every 10 minutes, and the guy was so cracked that he gave us information that prevented a terrorist attack.
First of all,
he grabbed that information and give it to us?
First of all, by my definition, that's not torture. Now, we're arguing about whether that is. I say that's not torture.
Secondly,
I think the president did say that. I think he said that the techniques that he's asking for were the techniques that were used to crack the various people in the secret CIA prisons that gave us the information that foiled certain plots that are keeping Americans safe and secure.
And he can't tell us about it. He can't give us a single example.
I don't think he's going to tell you that on February 7th, you know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you know, after 14 straight hours in 50-degree weather standing there naked was, you know, finally said enough is enough.
Why not?
Well,
if you could give us one concrete example, I think there'd be Americans that might go over to your side. Now, in my view, you don't ever give up American values, and that, in my view, I want my country to be held, like I actually think, to a higher standard. But I'm even willing to accept the same standards as other civilized nations.
Let me force you into a very difficult decision here, and that is the standard versus the practicality. Let's say we have a guy who we absolutely are convinced knows something that's going to happen in the next 48 hours. We picked up the chatter, we picked up everything, and we've just picked up the guy who we think is the mastermind, and we know something bad, equivalent of a World Trade Center, again, is going to happen in 48 hours. And we've got 48 hours to crack him. Under those circumstances, would you find it reasonable, as President of the United States, to sign an executive order finding that torture would be reasonable under those circumstances?
Let me give you an answer that John McCain gave to the ticking time bomb scenario.
Right.
And I thought it was very interesting when he said it. He said, if that happens, and it's true, the guy isn't innocent, that the information is real.
We believe this is the guy who planned it.
And someone is convinced of such beyond reasonable doubt that this is the guy that happens. He said, the torture will happen. If the person squeals and it saves lives, and the GI or the CIA agent is put before an American jury, not a jury in the country would convict him. Jury nullification, that's what it's all about. In other words, if it's such an extreme and unusual an example that someone's willing to risk life imprisonment, if they're so sure it's right that they're willing to risk their own life imprisonment for torturing someone, if they're wrong, that's their risk.
All right. If you're the CIA agent conducting the interrogation...
If I'm not willing to risk my life in prison, I shouldn't do it.
Are you willing to risk jury nullification to keep what you know is the right thing? But you've got to depend on jury nullification.
If I know it's the right thing, and there's no question in my mind, and I'm going to save thousands of lives, I think I'm pretty safe.
Well, the president has asked for legal protections for you under those circumstances,
yes.
And I don't think that's an unreasonable request.
But the legal protections, okay, are to say if I'm wrong, oops, I tortured 100 innocent people. I thought they were all ticking time bombs, Mike. Every one of them. Yeah, they were just farmers, goat herders in Afghanistan, but I was told by Ahmed Chalabi, who I believe, along with Curveball, are really reputable sources, and so I tortured them. Don't punish me. Don't punish me at all, in fact. In fact, the president wouldn't even have a 5-year punishment. He'd have no punishment at all. I think the ticking time bomb scenario, first of all, I've never heard of a single case in history. And someone, hey, folks, if you've heard of a single case where this hypothetical is actually true, I want to hear it. And then call in, 888-488-MARK. I would think that you folks on the right, the president would be waving that case. He would say, 1923, British intelligence found whatever it is. I don't know that, I'm not saying it couldn't hypothetically occur, but to me, John McCain's answer is, you know, Americans wouldn't convict someone if it were actually, or say it like this. If it saves, if you can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it saved 20 lives, it's okay. But you got to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. Let me go to my callers. 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
Okay, hon.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
What kind of man are you?
I'm a father.
Look here, my father was a father, and he smoked his brains out in the house.
Watch as he blows those smoke rings on my little red face.
You probably have asthma.
Asthma?
Asthma.
I'm telling you, nothing's going to happen to your kids.
Don't swear when you're lying. You know very well that thousands of kids get bronchitis, ear infections, and even pneumonia from their parents' cigarette smoke. And didn't you promise your little angels you'd smoke outside?
Those little devils are just so sweet.
Do the right thing.
Please, smoke outside.
Until you can stop, go out for your kids.
Take the pledge. Call 1-800-513-1157.
A challenge to join the elite.
If you succeed, if you can master your fear, outsmart your enemy, and never yield, even to yourself, you will be changed forever. The few, the proud, the Marines.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're debating over the proper conduct of our military, of our CIA, on treating people that have taken in, that we have taken in, knowing, in fact, that many times other countries will use this same standard for our men and women. And I do want to say that at the end of the broadcast, and this is totally apart from any debate, from Mike and I, both of us salute. We have a short montage video celebrating the life and the heroism of Colin Wolfe. He is from Manassas, Virginia, and he died in Iraq at age 19 as a Marine and was buried on September 11th. And I'll tell you a little bit more about him at the end of the broadcast. But without, I don't want to put him into politics, so I'll put that aside. But I'm concerned, and a lot of people in the military are concerned, that, as you say, what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. And that if we become known as a nation, I mean, let's just take the Geneva Conventions. This is a standard. It's an international standard. If you want to renegotiate it with the 100 countries that signed it, go for it, George Bush. But what do you just think of the fact that we are saying we're not going to hold ourselves to the same standard as this international convention?
Well, I don't know that we're saying that we're not going to hold ourselves to the same standard as the international convention.
That's what McCain's Law does.
There are any number of treaties that the United States has entered into where there has been concurrent legislation that has been our Congress explaining or defining what our signature on this particular treaty means. In this case, it's not concurrent, it's after, but it's really no difference other than timing in the process of having a congressional definition of what that treaty means the way we do with many, many other treaties. So I don't see anything different.
Mike, now, the Geneva Convention has been around since World War II.
Now, if we were to define our interrogation technique, saying, well, we're not going to torture, but we certainly think that, you know, taking a scalpel and carving somebody up live would not be torture, that wouldn't pass the laugh test, you know. So we're not going to do that. The international community would not buy that, et cetera. And plus, the defining thing there is we don't want our soldiers subjected to the same
That's
treatment.
That's right. That's exactly
but
right.
I think what
but
the
we already have
saying,
international standards.
But I think what the president is saying is that he is willing to accept the same standards for our people as for their people, and that means that if we engage in sensory deprivation,
sensory deprivation, it's sensory overload. Right. What they tendly do
overload.
Is they put someone in an extremely bright room at 100-something degrees and wake them up every 10 minutes or stuff like that, which leads people to hallucinate and become crazy. And my guess is whatever they told the authorities wouldn't be believable anyway, because it's probably a hallucination at that point.
You know, I have something in common with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. There was a column written about exactly what was used to get him to break. And apparently it was not just the cold room, it was not just the lights, it was not just the sleep deprivation, it was not all those things. But when they started playing the Red Hot Chili Peppers at full volume into his cell, he snapped and said, enough.
That's enough.
And I would be the same way.
That's enough to get any ordinary mortal. I understand. No, look. It seems to me, though, that none of this should be behind closed. I mean, the torture should be behind closed doors. But the techniques that we're going to use, if we're willing to stand behind them, if we're willing to say this is stuff that we as Americans say, you know, we're willing to do that. I have no problem with a police officer who takes a criminal defendant after getting his Miranda rights properly waived and going in and asking some tough questions. Where were you this night? Where were you? And good cop, bad cop, and that's fine. That's fine. Now, if the interrogation lasts for 70 hours constantly, you know, or 100 hours or 150 hours, and I mean, there is a point where things that are normal and perfectly fine can become torture. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that we can set those standards. Look, the Geneva Convention has been around since after World War II. We've had the Korean War. We've had the Vietnam War, Persian Gulf War. are we really in a situation where, after following these same conventions for 60 years, we're now redefining them downward? And we think this is going to help, because I think that actually around the world, when you look at people who are wondering about America, whether it be a Muslim man who is wondering whether he should be with radical Islam or the much, you know, normal, common, peaceful Islam, when you look at Europeans, when you're looking at who might come and support us when we need their support, I think they look and see whether America holds itself to the same standards as every other nation, whether we say, we can do whatever we want. And when we do that, I think we get less respect all around the world and less help in a way that helps our troops when we need it.
Well, Mark, two things there. The first is, are we doing something new here? I'm not convinced we are doing something new. I'm convinced we're having a more open discussion about it, a more open debate. Certainly the New York Times and the Washington Post thinks that this is appropriate discussion for front page day after day after day after day, which they have never thought before. But I don't believe for one minute that we
didn't have had a president that, before say I don't have to follow Geneva Conventions.
I don't think for a minute that we didn't have sensory overload or sensory deprivation or other innovative interrogation techniques back in Vietnam, back in Korea, back in the first Gulf War. I think that we and capturing various terrorists outside of the battlefield for the last 20, 30 years.
So why not spell it out?
I don't think this is new. I think
why not
this is something we've been
why not
doing?
Say that 100 decibels of red hot chili peppers is permissible, but when you turn it up to 1,000 decibels and it actually bursts your eardrums, that's torture. And why don't we go and set a level? And that way, frankly, you want to protect the CIA agents? They will know, hey, you know what? I can turn it up. I can turn the electric shock up to this level, but I can't turn it higher. I can, you know, and then we know, and at the same time, we know that if people do to our GIs the same kind of stuff that we're doing, we can say, you know, you went beyond the international civilized level. Doesn't that make sense?
It doesn't, and I'll tell you why. There's a couple reasons. Number one, you don't want to spell out what all your techniques are, because that gives the enemy the chance to read your manual and train their people in resisting those particular techniques. You sit there and you spend a week in training listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers. It's not going to make you snap the next time. You know, you're going to be acclimated to it. So you don't want to tell
I don't know, Lawrence Welk, I think, would make me snap. But
you don't want to give them the chance to train for your... And they do that, and we do that. Mark, when I was in the Marine Corps, I went through a three-day course on that, and others... that have been in positions much more risky than me in terms of getting caught have been through week and two-week courses on that. It's called escape and evasion and resistance.
Look, as I said, the Israeli Supreme Court back in the 90s outlawed torture there. And I can't think of any nation in the world that suffers more terrorism attacks on a daily basis than the state of Israel. I just don't think there is one. I think they got it worse than any other, per capita, however you want to count it.
They do. Per square mile, per capita, per dollar, however you want to do it, it's worse.
And despite the sacrifices they made in Lebanon, whatever, you don't see, in Israel, in fact, the Knesset, their Congress, can overrule the Supreme Court if they vote a certain way. It's, mm-hmm. And they haven't done it. And I'd venture to say the reason they haven't done it is not because some people in Israel don't want to torture those terrorists. I'm sure they do. It's because they recognize that the international community would be so grossly offended that they would get less support.
Nobody wants to torture anybody except the terrorists. They're the ones who are the torturers. They're the ones who cut heads off. They're the ones who cut fingers off. They're the ones who do, you know, all these things. They're the ones who stick a knife in your gut and disembowel you, you know, alive. They're the ones that, while your heart is still beating, stick their hand into your chest and yank your heart out of
And so you're arguing that America needs to descend to their levels.
Absolutely not. I'm saying they're the ones that do that. What we are talking about, legitimate interrogation techniques, in no way are comparable to those particular things. That's what I'm saying. I'm comfortable with what the president's asking for. We'll see where Senator McCain is.
Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. You can join in the debate, 888-488-6275. I want to move on to another topic, and this was also in the Washington Post. There was a big spread on Sunday. I meant to bring it in, and I didn't. But it talked about the first 15 months or so of the Coalition Provisional Authority of Iraq, and how the people that were hired there were not based on skills such as whether they were, you know, good educators for schools, or whether they were good engineers for bridges, or whether or not they had any finance degree for the stock market. They were put there based on loyalty. And in fact, it's interesting because the article said that normally civil service laws say you can't ask about politics when you put someone in a government civil service position, but there's an exception apparently for temporary stuff. So mm-hmm. they use that exception, and with that exception, $18 billion was spent by people who were hired solely because of their loyalty. They were asked, who'd you vote for? And if you didn't vote for George Bush, it didn't matter how good you were thrown out. They asked, and so you ended up with incompetent people. It's like Mike Brown at FEMA. You ended up with, it talks about this 24-year-old without a finance degree that was set to set up the Iraqi stock market. It gives examples of just complete incompetence by people. I mean, it talks about how conservatives, and I understand why you want to do this in America, but like the taxing authorities, they wanted a flat tax. Because, hey, we can't seem to get it in America. So instead of taking the Iraqi tax system that people were used to that existed for dozens of years, they immediately put in a flat tax. There's another example. The health authority didn't like universal health care, which apparently Saddam Hussein had. Hey, one thing he had above us, he had universal health care. People were used to be able to go and get health care without paying for it. Well, he said, no, that's not good. We want people to pay for health care. And so Iraqis didn't go, and there was a huge crisis. And they were trying to remake Iraq, not just in America's image, but in the most conservative version of America's image, and to do it right away in a complete change, which was, I think everyone concedes, a complete failure. And what's interesting to me is that I haven't seen any heads roll. Bremer's out. But why hasn't the administration said, and this would be great not just with Iraq, but with Michael Brown and Harriet Myers and a whole bunch of cronies, I can think of a bunch of ambassadors, we're going to hire based on competence, not based on ideology.
Well, first of all, Mark, even Senator Reid has said that Harriet Myers is one of the best White House counsels that he's ever worked with. So she's not in a position where she shouldn't be. But to your main point,
She may be fine as a White House counsel. I'm not sure about Supreme Court Justice. That's an old story.
I read a part of the article that you reference, and in the part that I read, it did stress that loyalty to the president was not only a key, perhaps the key component of being hired to be part of the provisional authority that helped to initially start rebuilding Iraq. However, it did not say that people were being hired exclusive of their credentials. Now, I did, in the part I read, it did note one 24-year-old guy who was part of the stock market.
He ran it.
Well, apparently. It didn't say that in the article. Yeah. Maybe after the jump it said that.
He set it up so that he wanted to make it a computerized system, which I give the guy credit. It would be nice to have a computerized stock exchange. But the Iraqis just want to get back started again and to use their pens and papers. And apparently this guy said, no, you can't do it that way. You have to do it the official way the New York Stock Exchange does it. And so they couldn't get started for 7 months until Bremer and his crew was out of there.
Brought in their computers or what was
the... Finally, they went around this guy and they ignored him and they did it with a pen on the board like they always had.
Like they always did it.
And, you know, you can't remake a society in our image from scratch. Frankly, it's very hard to take a country like Iraq that has thousands of years of history and say, we're going to make you exactly like the United States anyway. But you certainly can't do it overnight. And I think what happened when you have ideology instead of competence out there, you have exactly these kinds of mistakes where they say, well, in Michigan, there was one in the article, in Michigan we did it this way. Well, you know, what can I say? You know, Baghdad is not Detroit. It just isn't, and maybe we shouldn't treat it that way.
From Baghdad to Timbuktu or something like that? Mark, any attempt to create an Iraq in an exact replica of the United States was a mistake, and to the extent that people tried to create another United States, that was a mistake, and they were probably the wrong people in the wrong place at the wrong time to do that. But the problems we're having in Iraq are not as a result of that. The problems that we're having in Iraq are as a result of macro decisions that were made by Ambassador Bremer. Under the circumstances, I've told you on several occasions, the two things that I think he did wrong were the banning of the Baathists from any part of the government and the disbanding of the army. Had he not done those two things, notwithstanding whatever any 24-year-old wanted to have with a computerized stock market or something like that, I think we would have been much further along in the reconstruction and rehabilitation of Iraq had we not made those two mistakes.
I agree those two mistakes were crucial. I also think that whether it's the electricity grid or health care or the stock market or anything else, had we hired the most competent people rather than those most loyal to George Bush, we would have gotten a different result and we wouldn't have had the insurgency as strong as it is today. Folks, if you want to join the conversation, you can. 888-488-MARS is your last chance. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
Okay, hon.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promise?
What kind of man are you?
I'm a father.
Look here, my father was a father, and he smoked his brains out in the house.
Watch as he blows those smoke rings on my little red face.
You probably have asthma.
Asthma? Schlasma. I'm telling you, nothing's going to happen to your kids.
Don't swear when you're lying. You know very well that thousands of kids get bronchitis, ear infections, and even pneumonia from their parents' cigarette smoke. And didn't you promise your little angels you'd smoke outside?
Hey, Daddy.
Those little devils are just so sweet.
Do the right thing.
Please, smoke outside.
Until you can stop, go out for your kids.
Take the pledge. Call 1-800-513-1157.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Mike, there's another article in the news I want to talk about. It's another article in the Washington Post that talks about the CIA memo that came out in 2002. It was mentioned in the Senate Intelligence Report, which I know you're well aware of. But the article points out is that apparently there was this defector that was talking. And he made it absolutely clear not only that Saddam Hussein had no connection with al-Qaeda, but that they were actively working to look for al-Qaeda operatives. Occasionally they didn't succeed, but there was no love lost between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda, and he was doing his best to keep them out of Iraq. And that same defector, and it says in the article that the president, vice president, they don't remember reading such a report. It didn't seem to go up the chain after the CIA. But the other reports by this same guy that supported things that they said, that Iraq would like to begin this nuclear program over again. He didn't say that they had one, but that Saddam Hussein, if he could have, would have, which I don't dispute. That went right up. That's something that Cheney was talking about. And it seems to me that someone, I just don't know how you can come to any conclusion, but that someone, and we'll talk about who in a minute, was cherry-picking intelligence, was saying, you know what, the president wants this, so I'm going to take the facts that back that policy, and I'm going to give those to the president. And the facts that don't back it, we'll just keep those aside. In other words, that the Downing Street memo was exactly right. The president had a policy and fixed the facts around the policy. And I guess my question for you is, first of all, in general, and then in specific to this case, do you think that a president should look at all the facts, look at all the information, and then decide what to do? Or do you think a president should decide what to do and then find whatever facts he can to support that predetermined idea?
Well, Mark, as you know, this CIA report is not something that's brand new. It's not something that leaked yesterday or the day before. This is really old news. It's been around for a while. It was recently recited in the Senate report that was released last week, but it's four-year-old news. So if you want to keep beating the same dead horses, we can beat them.
Well, four years ago, Cheney was talking about a connection, and so was the president, between al-Qaeda and Iraq. Now at least they're admitting that they don't have one.
And there still are people who think there was a connection, although it was never a pretext to go to war. The pretext to go to war was the enforcement of the UN resolutions, which Saddam had thumbed his nose at for some 10 years. And it was, 17 resolutions that
come
he just
back
had
to
a hard time.
Come on back to cherry picking, because I think that's exactly what's happening, and I think it's still happening.
As you know, up until the recreation or redesign of the intelligence community, the president had a personal briefing by the director of Central Intelligence, George Tenet, every morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. It was during those particular briefings.
That was going to be George Slam Dunk Tenet? George Slam Dunk Iraq has WMD's Tenet? Would that be his name?
I think it would be George Bill Clinton appointee Tenet.
That's right.
And George Democratic staffed committee chairman of the House Intelligence Committee.
And George Medal of Freedom winner, even after he got all those facts wrong.
Well, as you know, the last time we discussed this, you gave me a choice of three people who I would have the medal taken
Tenet
away from.
Rumsfeld, right. And there was a third.
And I agreed that Mr. Tenet could give his medal back. So,
okay, we can agree on that.
We had every morning at 8 o'clock, George Tenet was giving the president his briefing. And yes, it was during that series of briefings that the term slam dunk was used. When he was told that the WMDs in Iraq were a slam dunk. Now, if Director Tenet is, you know, giving the briefings every morning, it's only normal that the president would be listening to these things. He has been described, the president, as engaged, aware of details, follow-up questions, et cetera, on these particular kinds of things. So it would appear to me that it was an oversight on the part of the CIA. And perhaps Director Tenet never saw this report. It never made it up to his desk, but clearly it never made it to the president's desk. To answer your global question, no, you don't cherry-pick things. You get them all in a global basket. You evaluate them all.
I'm glad to hear
that
you agree that that's the right way to make the decision.
Only way to make public policy.
Well, now, of course, it's not just this particular thing. There is the Downing Street memo and saying, in effect, the British thought the president made a policy and made the facts to fix it. But we know except that Dick Cheney himself was going down to the bowels of the CIA. I mean, no vice president apparently had ever done this before. He went down to Langley. He went down to the desks of the service officers, and he's like, what you got? What you got? And this is good. This is good stuff. And, of course, what they do at the CIA is they get information from hundreds of thousands of sources.
Raw reports.
They put it together. They say, you know, curveball. But he was German intelligence said he's not believable. But Dick Cheney wrote down curveball stuff, and of course the president gave it in his State of the Union address. Isn't this an administration? You know, I don't know that President Bush knew. I'm not sure what every day President Bush knows. But I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that Vice President Cheney knew exactly this information and cherry picked the one that he wanted.
Well, I don't know that we know that. And
History will tell.
Well, these documents do exist, and at some point in 20, 30, 40 years, they'll all be declassified. We'll look at them. You and I will be old men at that time.
Right, and then you'll say, it's old news, Mark. It doesn't matter. That's what you'll say. You'll say, Jeb Bush's son is the one. Never mind. I don't even want to think about that.
You know,
I don't want to go there.
You know, as we look at what the British, you know, thought about this, et cetera, you know, the British still stand by their report.
No, they don't.
No.
Aluminum tubes.
No, I'm talking about they're standing by the report that the Iraqis were looking for yellow cake in Niger. And now that we've...
That's not my understanding.
My
understanding is that the British have backed off that report.
Okay, well, we'll...
You know what? We're going to look this up, folks, and we're going to get back to you, our next debate. All right? You go to your sources. I'll go to mine. My understanding is the British have long ago discounted that report.
Okay.
Let me ask you about that. And again, just coming up in about 3 minutes, we're going to do a tribute to Lance Corporal Colin Joseph Wolfe, 19-year-old local guy who gave his life for his country, and we definitely want to get to that. But we do have a couple more minutes. Just real quick, I want to talk about the Pope.
Okay.
I want to talk about his speech. I don't think he meant any harm, and yet I really don't. I think he was talking about, obviously religion should be by persuasion and not by the sword.
Not by coercion.
But it seems to me that Christianity, like Islam, like many religions, certainly has, at some points in its history, done coercion by the sword. Judaism did too. It's just that Jesus didn't have power for 2,000 years. But back during the Maccabees, there was some of that too. It's occurred in most religions. And I think it would be nice if the Pope were, while not apologizing, at least to make clear that all religions have this history and it's wrong wherever it occurs. And that might be a way to diffuse the situation. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I think the Pope has indicated that he regrets very much the reaction to his words. He didn't specifically
apologize. Right, he said he regrets the reaction.
He didn't specifically apologize.
And he cited a 14th century guy and then later on told us he didn't agree with what he said. But apparently the context wasn't so clear in the academic speech.
It was to me. I read the speech because it's available online. I read the speech. It was clear to me because he said, and I quote, and then he quoted the guy in the context of the speech.
It was clear that he didn't agree with that quote?
It was absolutely clear that he was not signing on to that particular thing. But here you have a bunch of radicals who say, how dare you call me violent? How dare you call my religion violent? And, you know, just because you called my religion violent, I'm going to go out and I'm going to burn five or six churches and I'm going to shoot a nun in the back who's praying.
Right.
Now, how much more...
Obviously, those people are violent. But I think it's fair to say the vast majority, certainly of American Muslims, and I think it's fair to say the vast majority still, despite Osama bin Laden, of Muslims around the world, do condemn that kind of violence. And I just think it's important for any leader, whether it be the Pope or anyone else, to make the distinction between the radical Islamic fascism, if that's what you want to call it, that we're fighting against, which we can all agree is awful, and the great still majority of law-abiding Muslims around the world. I guess,
Mark, there's no doubt that the vast majority of Muslims are law-abiding, they're peace-abiding, and they're very good practitioners of their religion. Where I think they fall short, where I want to see them do more, is in condemnation of the kinds of reaction
that we've seen. I've seen some of that. I do want to move on, though, because it's very important that we tribute, give a tribute to Lance Corporal Colin Joseph Wolfe. He is at 19 years old, was struck down in Iraq. Apparently, he wanted to be a Marine from the time he was in sixth grade and defend his country. And I want to play a tribute to him of his family. Lance Corporal Wolfe, we value your sacrifice. I think it's always important to remember, whatever your views on any political issue, that there are people, men like Colin Wolfe, who apparently on September 11, 2001, decided to join up and fight for his country, and just a few weeks ago died for his country.
Colin, as a fellow Marine, I know what it meant to wear the uniform and to earn the title. To you, I thank you for your sacrifice on behalf of a very grateful nation. Semper Fidelis, my friend.
Rest in peace. And thank you to his family for giving this to us to share. That's it for the Inside Scoop.
show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
You can count down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, welcome back. We've been waiting for you since yesterday. Here we are, 3 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll be with you until 5 here on the Guy James Show, part of the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you with us today. Another dreary afternoon here in Southwest Florida. Warm, but somewhat dreary. I don't know where all this cloudiness is coming from, but it's got to stop. All the visitors here, all the snowbirds that are here, they don't like that. They like to go to the beach and get their suntans. You can always tell who the Floridians are. They're the ones that are white as a sheet, and all the visitors are nice and tan. That's kind of how it goes. How are you today? Yeah, keeping up on all the news and Britney Spears and what's that other girl, the Hilton girl, and Britney's sister. And I watched that celebrity news for about 15 minutes, and I thought, well, I'm going to have to drop out of this. I don't even know who most of these people are. I guess I do know who Britney Spears is, and I do know who the Hilton girl is, but the rest of them they talk about, I just don't know. We were discussing that yesterday, showbiz stuff. I'm woefully behind on showbiz. I guess I don't like a lot of it nowadays, so I just kind of stay away. There are no Humphrey Bogarts, I don't know. I just think it's different today. Meryl Streep. She's starting to get a little older now, but I think Meryl Streep's the greatest female actress ever. Ever. And always enjoyed her work. But, yeah, show business passing me by, so we won't talk a lot about that today, certainly not. I did see the folks on TV. This wasn't on TV, it was on the news, but there's a group calling on the folks over at Viagra, the makers of Viagra, to cut back on the ads. They're going to do that. They say it promotes AIDS. I don't know what the association is there. Anyway, I guess they say more sex, more AIDS. I don't know what the deal is. But anyway, I doubt they're going to do that anytime soon. And I saw a cute site today. had a whole bunch of these on it, but I'll only give you one. Crazy gift tags that you might put on a gift. And I thought this one was rather interesting. It's if you're going to give a gift at the office, here's what you put on the tag. Ho, 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 my ass. Just accept this secret Santa gift as the impersonal workplace obligation it is. I wonder how many people have been thinking that over the years. Boy, I guess so. I do see that it appears that Junior Bush is going to be asking for more troops to head over to Iraq. He's going to wait till after Christmas to do it. What's up with that, waiting till after Christmas? Why not give everybody the news right now? He says he wants to make sure that the change in Iraq is right. He says he doesn't want to be rushed on the strategy. He wants to make sure. If that isn't a hoot, I don't know what is. Once a junior wants to make sure. Oh, and before I forget, we're going to have Vic Camber, well-known Democratic strategist, with us on the program, coming up in about 25 minutes or so. So I better get on with it. I won't have everything said that I want to say before Vic gets in here. Always good, and you can catch his blog at viccamber.com. And we're going to talk about the 08 presidential candidates from both sides of the aisle. So that'll be good. Did you see any of that little deal that Junior Bush was saying, that latest speech of his this morning? I tell you, it's hard for me to believe.